Morning, everyone. Welcome to Senate Finance. It's Thursday morning at 8:50 on the 15th of May. Recognize Senator Bundy, Senator Olson, Senator Taylor.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Green is going to join us a little bit later this morning. And Senator Stevens has stepped out for a second. He'll be right back. A full agenda today, and before we adjourn it, recess sometime around quarter 11, I'd like to check with the members in regards to their schedule to have a meeting this afternoon. Today we have about a dozen bills we'd like to work our way through and get those out of the way. Morning, Senator Stevens.
Morning.
Get those out of the way today. So sometime in the next couple hours, if you could consider your schedules for this afternoon and let me know what times you would be available. We don't have a meeting scheduled for tonight, but we could certainly recess to an evening meeting if we needed to do that at 4:30 or 5 o'clock. So the sooner we can get to it this afternoon, depending on floor, the better. So if you just let me know. Turn off cell phones and pagers. And anything else come before the committee before we begin our consideration of the calendar? Okay. Let me tell you what we're going to do here. Got lots of folks here, so I'll try to squeeze you in as best we can so I don't hold you up. We're going to do House Bill 61 first. Representative Chenault, you'll come forward. And we're going to go to, secondly, we're going to do the seafood and food safety lab so Commissioner Ballard can get back to work. We want to get the education block in here, and we put them off for 2 days. So, I think we'll pick up a couple of little bills and dispatch with those. So, from Senator Cowdery's office, why don't you keep an eye on us, and we should get to you maybe at about quarter to 10. Okay, so when we get close after the education block, we'll call you. Would you do that and come back? Probably be about an hour, so you don't have to wait. Then we'll pick up 58 and 59. So 61 first, 215 second, House Bill 266 third, 225 fourth. Then we'll go to the education block, which is 165, 171, 174, and 154. And we'll go back to Senator Cowdery, Senate Bill 58, 59, and then Chitna. So that ought to get us rolling. So with that, if that's all right with everybody. Senator Taylor?
Mr. Chairman, there are two committee substitutes on 61. There's both the finance CS, but also the resources CS. I thought we had adopted one, and I can't remember right now.
If we have before us House Bill 61. House Bill 61 allows a tax credit equal to 10% of qualified capital investment, as well as annual labor, seismic, and associated costs related to gas exploration and development sponsored by Representative Chenault, and the question before us is, are we on version U?
Yes.
Okay, Senator Olson, we have before us, Senator Taylor, in answer to your question, we have before us version U. We've adopted you. Thank you for that clarification. We have before us amendment number one. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we be able to withdraw amendment number one.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Is there objection to removing amendment number one from the table? Seeing none, then we have before us version U. Let's see, discussion. Anything else to discuss on House Bill 61 in the committee?
I'm prepared, Mr. Chairman, to move the bill, but I wanted to make certain that the chair wanted version U as opposed to the Finance Committee substitute.
Well, let's make sure here. Thank you for that clarification. We do have version S. Representative Chenault, can you tell us what did we do in the Finance Committee substitute to change it from the resource substitute? I don't remember back 2 days.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That's the House Finance version. I don't believe that we have a Senate Finance version.
All right. Okay. That's why you're here, to help us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Chenault, is there anything to add to House Bill 61?
No, Mr. Chairman, there's not.
Any questions to the prime sponsor? Any further amendments? Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons that I moved amendment, or withdrew amendment number one. I just don't like the idea that we're excluding a portion of my district, and certainly I want to appreciate the committee taking care of my district with Senate Bill 185, and I certainly would like to make the committee aware that any future bills that excludes the western part of the district, I would like to see them have favorable consideration for issues such as this as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well put, Senator Olson. We kind of thought Senate Bill 185 would take care of your concern.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Schnaud, I would hope that when this hits the floor that you include in the packet page 12, 13, and 14 as an explanation for the members of the Senate. Anything else? Senator Taylor?
Move the bill with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection to moving House Bill 61? Seeing none, House Bill 61 passes from committee. Let's bring before us Senate Bill 215.
Welcome, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Schnaud. And ask Mr. Ballard to join us this morning. This is a bill sponsored by the Rules Committee. Request the Governor, Senate Bill 215, authorizes the sale of 14.145 million in certificates of participation for the financing and construction of a new seafood and food safety lab for the Department of Environmental Conservation. We have with us this morning Commissioner Ernesta Ballard to present the bill. Good morning, ma'am. Welcome to Finance.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and thank you for allowing me to go second on your crowded agenda. I have prepared remarks which are available to you, so I will not read them. I have with me today the Deputy Commissioners of the Department of Revenue and DOT, Tom Boutin and John McKinnon. Together we can answer questions about the programmatic need for the lab. I will answer those questions. The financing mechanisms selected, and Tom Boutin can address those. And the construction and site issues, John McKinnon can address those. I'd like simply to say that this process has been underway for 7 years now. The governor, past legislatures, the commissioners of revenue, DOT, and DEC have all reviewed the design specifications, the equipment requirements, the expense, and the financing alternatives for this lab. And specifically, at the request of members of the legislature this winter, we carefully considered the possibility of locating in remodeled space at the ASI facility in Anchorage, where our space requirements would occupy just 5% of the available space in that building. We have also reviewed the fees that we charge for services in our lab, and we realize that our fees are simply out of step with those charged in comparable states, and we will be undertaking a fee review this summer and hope to come forward next year with any statutory changes that are necessary to increase those fees to better cover the new occupancy costs. And I appreciate your consideration of this bill today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Taylor?
I've had a chance to work with the commissioner on this, and as you know, I had concerns that we need a very similar lab in Southeast Alaska for the dive industry and the seafood mariculture industry down here. I've participated in this process since inception. I'm very pleased to see it finally coming to fruition. I think the commissioner has done a great job in basically recycling, if you will, a state asset that has not been used very well in the past, and hopefully they will get good utilization out of it. It will actually enhance and speed up the process of testing, especially for PSP, and I strongly support the legislation. And with that, I would move 215 State Affairs CS from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
It's just for a moment, I'll object. Did Mr. Boutin want to speak with us? Tom, anything you'd like to share with us? And I'd like to ask, Commissioner, just for the record, could you talk about the location and the synergy created by the buildings being next to the public health lab?
Is that public health lab.
Could you let the committee know about that?
I can, while Tom is getting settled, Mr. Chairman. The public health lab next door was constructed several years ago and has adequate conferencing and training and teaching areas for us to use. Our lab will therefore be simply the laboratory spaces, the complicated HVAC penthouse, which is necessary to protect and separate the different laboratory areas, and room for the laboratory workers themselves. It is therefore, on a square footage basis, the minimal footprint we would need to perform our laboratory functions. All the rest of those would be performed next door in the public health lab.
Great. Thank you. Tom, anything to share?
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Tom Boutin, Department of Revenue. I just wanted to say the state has used this lease financing mechanism many, many times over the years and very recently, regularly. It's a well-understood credit out there, the state lease finance debt, and I'd be glad to answer any questions about the financing.
Questions of Mr. Boutin? Okay. I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection to moving Senate Bill 215 from committee? Seeing none, Senate Bill 215 passes from committee. Thank you, Commissioner,
thank
for being
you
here
very
this
much.
Morning.
Can you take up 266?
That's what we're going to do next. Next bill before us will be House Bill 266. Let's see if I can find it here. House Bill 266 is sponsored by the Rules Committee by the request of the Governor. House Bill 166 makes necessary statutory changes to comply with the Election Reform Law signed by President Bush in 2002, named the Help America Vote Act, commonly known as HAVA. We have with us today the Director of Elections, Ms. Laura Glazier, to present the bill and her able assistant. So welcome to the table, Laura. Nice to see you. Present your bill, please.
Mr. Chairman, Laura Glazer, Director, Division of Elections. If you would give me the indulgence, I'll just read from the sponsor statement.
Please do.
House Bill 266, as you said, is a compliance measure to come into compliance with the federal law, the Help America Vote Act. Changes recommended in this bill before you follow the intent of federal law and do not place unnecessary burdens on the voter. In no time did we go past the intent of federal law. It's imperative that these changes mandated by federal law are passed by the legislature this year. House Bill 266 also includes changes the division recommends. The division supports the language recommended in Senator Lincoln's Senate Bill 24 and has been included in this bill with her permission. Other changes regarding returning identification and voter cards to other jurisdictions, reference to a master list, and adding types of information that can be provided by the voter when registering in person are requested by the division in this bill. In House State Affairs, they removed the language suggested by the division, changing the term question ballots to provisional ballots. The federal law refers to provisional voting, as do many other states, but House State Affairs decided to leave it as it was, as question voting. State Affairs Committee also restored references to the division sending voters letters regarding the status of their absentee, question, or partially counted ballots in addition to the free access system provided in the bill. The House Finance Committee substitute removes perhaps the most significant change not mandated by the federal act but recommended by the division. In two versions of the bill, the division recommended replacing the terms nonpartisan and undeclared with the term unaffiliated. But because of the action in House Finance, that's removed, and so they'll remain those classes of voters, undeclared and nonpartisan. And I ask for your support of the legislation, and I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Laura. Questions, Senator Bundy?
Yes, thank you, and I appreciate the work that the division's done, and I'm supporting of this legislation. I want to share with the committee and some of my concerns and address a couple of questions. During the past election, it came to my attention there was a fellow who was registered twice. And in discussing this with the Lieutenant Governor's office, it turned out they really didn't ask for any firm sort of identification. Now, I don't know if this person voted twice, but he was certainly registered twice. And other events in the past going through voter lists, I find people registered to vote at a post office box. And, you know, they have to register their actual address, and I doubt they live in that post office box. So there have been some, I think, pretty lax enforcement of making sure that people are actually voting in the districts that, in which they live. You know, I know people move and choose not to or neglect to change their registration address, their official address, but they should, by a more careful check of identification, I think it will lower the incidence of this. I noticed that in Section 12, it allows registrants to register with a hunting or fishing license or a copy of the utility bill, bank statement, government document, all of which could be stolen from a mailbox if they want to. And, of course, none have picture identification. And I'm just, while I know there are portions of Alaska that maybe they driver's license aren't as common as other parts, with the air travel that's so common in Alaska, it's hard to believe that there's anyone in Alaska that wouldn't have a picture ID. And it appears to me that this should be tightened up so to require picture identification.
Senator Bundy, through the chair.
Clerk, get a little closer to that microphone, if you would, please.
The Section 12 is dealing with the act of voting, not the act of registration. So you can show, when you go to vote, you can show a registration card. It doesn't have your picture on it. That Section 12 is not about registering to vote. It's about the act of voting. There are two different sections of our laws, first for registration and then for the act of voting.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, and if I have your fishing license, I can vote for you because there's no picture ID.
Senator Bundy, through the chair, if you had my voter registration card, you could as well.
So I'm suggesting that a picture ID ought to be shown at the voting place as well as instead of these other
items. Felix, it looks like you wanted to chime in on that answer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah Felix from the Attorney General's office.
Morning.
The thought that I had is that the photo ID requirement was not required by HAVA, and I believe the division was trying to comply with the minimum requirements of HAVA. If the legislature were to wish to impose an additional requirement over and above what HAVA requires of the picture ID, I believe that would be a policy call of the legislature.
Thank you. Senator Taylor?
I don't have any questions or concerns. If we're ready, I'm ready to move the bill and would move to move CS for House Bill 266 from committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal notes. I'll then object for the purposes of additional discussion. I did want to thank the division for what I think has been an excellent job this year, because I'm a night owl. I work late here. I'm oftentimes in my office 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. That's kind of normal for me. And I find the lights on up there and the director working long after many others have left, and I particularly felt that was should be noted to this committee this year. Not that others don't do the same thing. There are a lot of people here who work really hard. But this division started off with basically a zero budget this year because the previous administration blew every dime they had to work with. And I think they've done an outstanding job. Basically, all this legislation is about is just trying to comply and comport with federal law one more time. We're fine-tuning Alaska to comply with the federal mandate, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's good ideas that Congress has had. I do agree with my colleague that we need to have a tighter system, and I think his comments are well taken. But I did want to really appreciate the hard work that has been put in this division this year, because I think it's been outstanding.
Thanks, Senator Taylor. Before we move the bill, Senator Olson had some discussion. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have is for Ms. Glazier there. You made a comment about some of the provisions that were put into placed because of what Senator Lincoln had suggested. And in listening to what my colleague from Anchorage had talked about, that it's hard to understand why people with all the traveling wouldn't have any type of ID that would identify that. I could only reiterate that I asked, there are a significant number of people out in rural Alaska who haven't, say, been to Anchorage. In fact, one of the times I asked somebody, why haven't you been to Anchorage? I've never been to Anchorage. They said, their response to me was, I've never been to Anchorage. I didn't leave anything or forgot anything there. Why should I go back? Why should I go there? So with that, I see the reason that they are there, but I want to know what exactly were the provisions that Senator Lincoln stuck into here with consideration for the rural registered voters.
Senator Olson, through the chair, Senator Lincoln's provision was for those people who have, because of distance and terrain, can't go to vote. They can request a special absentee, they can have an advanced ballot sent to them. So it's our regional office in the Northwest area and in Fairbanks supported the bill. Senator Lincoln had brought it before the legislature, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson. Senator Bundy?
And we'll just continue on that and then an additional comment or question. But before you send that ballot out, you require some valid identification. Even in bush plains, they're going to start looking for picture ID. So, again, the fact that they don't travel to Anchorage doesn't have any impact on whether you actually prove that the person asking for the ballot is indeed that person. Three, 4 years ago, we followed a rabbit trail that where it appeared like a dead person had voted. And we couldn't get total confirmation, but there was still a question of it appeared they might have. So anyway, what proof of identity do you require before you send those ballots out?
Senator Bundy, through the chair. They have to send a copy of a photo ID or a copy of the with the absentee ballot request.
Wanted that on the record. And I have another example of a person living in my district who's registered to vote in another district. And just a question about what is the department or division going to do to begin to purge these people who claim that their residence is a post office box or that they're living in one district and voting in another? Is there anything that is not outrageously expensive that you can do to begin to clean up these rolls?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, we're going to look at that during interim. There may be changes required to our law. The purge system is based on the Motor Voter Act of 10 years ago. And there may be, and I've had conversations with Department of Justice to look into maybe putting another bill before the legislature that would allow us to perhaps do a better job of purging those rules.
And one final thing, are you able, or would it take legislation to compare resident addresses and voter registration with PFD file?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, this piece of legislation allows us to do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Last comment, Mr. Chairman, to my good friend, the senator over there that had to do with picture ID. I'm not familiar with that. The only picture ID that I require when the people fly, at least on the airplanes that I've been there, is that the guy either looks like George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, or something like that. That's all the photo ID I require. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
At least you're honest.
You'll notice he didn't mention many George Washingtons.
Senator Taylor, then I have a closing comment.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have always encouraged every supporter to vote early and to vote often.
That's right.
And, I remove my objection.
And before you do that, I just wanted to call the committee's attention the letter from the governor, paragraph 3, that talks about for the next 3 years our state will receive some $5 million a year under the HAVA Act. Ms. Glazier has already put that money to work and has supplanted some of our capital budget some of your money with federal money, and I thank Laura for doing that. And she's going to do more of that, she's promised, and so we're going to hold her to that promise. Is there any objection to moving House Bill 266? Seeing none, it passes. Thank you, ladies, for being here today. Let's go to House Bill 225, Monopoly and Restraint of Trade. Who's going to present that to us? Oh, all right. Is there someone online for us? Before, okay, let me do a little scheduling work here. We're standing at ease and in place at ease. Is there Mr. Smith? No one? Okay. Then we'll set that aside. Will you let me know when will you let me know when Mr. Smith comes online, and we'll then take 225. Let's roll into our education block, and we will. We have four bills that all involve education. Let's just go right down the line. Let's start with community schools, which is House Bill 165. I know we have a couple of ladies here. And at the outset, I'll thank the department and those people that have hung with us as we've tried to schedule these over the last couple of days. Your patience is appreciated. Let's see. House Bill 165 is sponsored by the Rules Committee that requests the governor. House Bill 165 eliminates the community schools grant program. The $500,000 for this program has been deleted in both the House and Senate operating budgets. In addition, House Bill 165 places in the uncodified law a findings of intent section regarding community schools. We have one person signed up to testify and one person on the teleconference line, but before we get to those folks, welcome Kevin to the table, if you would present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kevin Sweeney. I'm Special Assistant to the Commissioner in the Department of Education and Early Development. House Bill 165 deals with the statutes relating to the Community Schools Grant Program. This grant program began in 1975. The purpose of the grant program was to provide financial support to encourage and assist local school districts in the establishment of community schools. Basically, what we're talking about here is startup funds. The grant program has been extremely successful. To date, the state has granted over $30 million to local school districts to help them get community schools up and running. Today, 53 school districts do operate community schools. In addition, the funds that we've given for community schools activities have helped districts grow their entire community education programs, expanding the traditional community schools programs to include things like before and after childcare, remedial programs for students, in addition to adult education. I think it's important to note that when we're dealing with this bill, the administration is by no means suggesting that we want to close and end the community schools program. The community schools program has grown. It provides a very good service to students and adults alike in communities. And the administration wants the community schools to continue. However, in a time when we're looking to make some cuts to government, the administration identified this as a very reasonable cut. We've been providing startup funds for 28 years now to this program. The program, if fully funded, would cost the state about $3.3 million. However, the program has not been fully funded since the mid-80s. Since 1988, we've funded the program between $400,000 and $800,000. Today, we're not funding the program at all. It's a zero-funded grant program. The administration does not see any room in the budget in the coming years to fund this program. All this bill does is remove the grant program from the statutes. It does not stop local districts from operating community schools, and the administration doesn't believe that by ending the state grant, that community schools will go away. We're talking about really a very small portion of the money that these districts raise for community schools. I think everybody has in their packet, for instance, if we took a look at the Anchorage School District, we have I think we've provided their budget for you. When you look at community services, and this is really when we funded community schools for startup money, this is kind of what we believe was envisioned, was that we start up to get them going with community schools, which will help bring in a whole realm of activities. So if you look, for instance, at the expenditures or the revenue that is raised by the Anchorage School District for Community Education, it's over $2 million. The state provides $150,000. The community schools portion of that is over $600,000. So we're really talking about a small portion of what the schools have now been able to generate through this program. And we believe that by removing the state's portion, that communities, that the local school districts will be able to make up the shortfall either through increased user fees, help from the community, or grants from outside. And that's really what we envisioned with this program in the beginning, and with that, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Kevin? Questions of the administration? Senator Taylor?
Questions? I'd move HB 165 with individual recommendations, attach fiscal note, and would object for purposes of further discussion.
Senator Taylor, we've got some folks who want to talk to us.
Yeah, I just wanted to have it on the table
okay.
Ready to go.
All right, so there's Senator Bundy.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm pleased that the program can continue, that I understand that this was just startup money and that, you know, the majority of the money that provide these classes are really coming from tuition. Have you done any calculation about how much the average tuition would have to go up to continue? It sounds as if maybe you like about a quarter or maybe a third.
Through the chairman, Senator Bundy, it would really range from community to community, but we looked at Anchorage, for instance, because Anchorage does get the largest amount of money through community schools. And giving you estimates, from testimony we've heard from the community schools director, they have about 55,000 individual users of community schools. Right now, they generate, with those users, somewhere between $65,000 and $70,000 in user fees, which they give back to the district instead of putting it back into the program. So using quick math, if they took that money that they're now giving back to the district, invested it back into the community schools program, and raised user fees by a little over a dollar, they'd be able to make up the $150,000 coming from the state.
Thank you.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, as we look at some of the schools, especially out in rural Alaska, where it tends to be the biggest facility within the area, where you have things like funerals taking place, especially when we have a lot of people from other communities coming on in here. Is it possible to go ahead and use these education funds to go ahead and pay for the utilities such as heat and lights for some of the gymnasiums, say? Is that possible for these funds?
Through the chair, I'm not sure if that's what they're using the money for now. Another sheet that we gave shows what the local school districts report to us as their community education expenditures. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of the smaller rural districts, they're reporting that 100% of their money is going towards community schools. But I'd like to add that if you take a look at how much money that is, it's an average of only about $4,000 per community. It ranges from $1,500 up to about $10,000. So that amount of money is really less than what you're talking about in the fluctuations that school districts have to endure when one child graduates and isn't replaced by another. So I'm not sure what they're using that money for, if it's to pay for the facilities. But really, the community, the local school district, with their operating funds that they generate from the foundation, pays for those types of, for the utilities, for the upkeep. And so I would argue that though they're reporting $1,500 as their contribution to community schools, it's really a lot more than that, because they're already paying for the maintenance, already paying for the heat and the facilities.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. James, you want to join us? And just a brief comment on your spreadsheet entitled FY02 Community Schools. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name's Eddie Jeans. I'm the school finance manager for the Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, we did prepare the spreadsheet that shows community service expenditures in the first column as reported in the fiscal year 02 financial audits. And as Mr. Sweeney mentioned earlier, in your handout on the, that has to do with the Anchorage School District, you'll see on the fourth page back, community services is defined as activities that are not directly related to providing education for students. It also goes on to say it includes community recreation activities, civic activities, public libraries, public radio, community welfare and childcare in residential day schools. So, Mr. Chairman, there are other community services being provided that are outside the community schools grant, and that was the point that we're trying to make with this spreadsheet. I would also like to mention, in response to the question from Senator Olson, that in the foundation statute under 1417.300B, it does state that the money in the account, which is the public school account, may be used only in aid of public schools, including community schools activities. So, Mr. Chairman, there's still the support for community schools activities in statute in 1417, the foundation program. And I'd be happy to answer any other questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Jeans?
I withdraw my objection.
Let's go to the teleconference. Well, let's have Joyce talk with us. Joyce, you've been hanging around for a couple days. With us, Joyce Kitka here from Juneau. Morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for your patience.
I have a handout for you. My name is Joyce Kitka, and I'm a volunteer with the Alaska Association for Community Ed, and I've kind of followed Mr. Jeans and Mr. Sweeney through this whole process, and we still differ on some statements that they make. The Alaska Association for Community Ed is a volunteer organization that promotes community education throughout the state of Alaska. Our memberships consist of those individuals who support lifelong learning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 165. I know that each one of you have heard from your folks concerning this bill. Some of Mr. Bundy's folks traveled many hours, many times to testify, and I think one of them may be online today. We are here to ask you not to support House Bill 165. We realize that times are tough and funding may not be available at this time. However, passing this bill will eliminate the possibility of funding in the future. In front of you, you have a sheet which outlines the history of funding for community schools, the number of folks that we serve, and the astounding number of volunteers that we recruit, train, and supervise. Today's testimony is to ask why there is really a need to eliminate the statute that says community schools is in existence in Alaska today. Although through the process, we've only heard the EED argue that the intent of community school statute was to only start up the program. And I have to change my little speech here because we have progressed from being only programs that open gyms to a little bit more. So education has been a good thing in this process. We have countered their statements with attorneys' opinions that differ with the interpretation of the statute. We provided folks, many of you, with stacks of information about the different types of programs that we offer. We've been told that there are corporate sponsors out there that can fund our programs, while other legislators have swore and laughed at these comments. We've been told that we need to raise our fees, yet we have not been fully funded for 17 years and are always asked to do more, so we have already raised fees, being creative in establishing partnerships throughout the state, and have exhausted a lot of our choices. We often serve the poor, the single parent families, and raising fees will eliminate these folks from our programs. We have been told that schools will pick up these programs. We chuckle, as we know our districts are facing tremendous costs and little money to fund them. I know even here in Juneau, our district is starting to have problems in finding the resources to handle just simply the wear and tear on the facilities by our community usage. Our participants and staff are upset, and I apologize if you have been the recipient of their frustration. Over the past years, community educators have approached the Commissioner of Education and ask, how can community education be a part of their team? They've had no response. Community schools programs across the state have never been asked about their programs, only to have assumptions presented to the legislature. The task of reporting about how your money is being spent was deemed not needed by any DEED probably about 5 or 6 years ago. So the Alaska Association for Community Ed has utilized the volunteers to compile and provide you with the participant numbers and programs. They feel they've been fiscally responsible and are being punished for their efforts. The last thing I wanted to touch on today was that of respect. As citizens of Alaska, we recognize and respect your efforts. While we may not always agree with you, your decisions, we respect them. Unfortunately, many of our participants and staff feel that the respect has not been shown to them by DEED and the governor, who have not thoroughly looked at the program they propose eliminating, thus insulting the years of hard work and successful programs. We feel that it has been a game with DEED over the years. Last Friday evening, as I exited the House floor observing area, I witnessed a DEED person high-fiving another person and claiming the victory as House Bill 165 cleared the House floor. It became apparent to me that it isn't about what's good for kids. It isn't about what's best for Alaskans. It's a game, and it's about who can win. However, I can assure you that there are no winners, as programs will be lost, students and adults will suffer, and buildings will go unused. You've already made the choice not to fund community schools. If you think the legislation is bad, then let's spend the next year working together on making it better. Eliminating the programs as outlined by H. Bill 165 does nothing to make Alaska a better place to live or to utilize the incredible amount of resources available in the community schools program. So I got to say my piece. I thank you. If you have any questions, I do know for a fact, and I don't know if there's anybody on from Anchorage, what wasn't reported was the amount of money that Anchorage has in their school budget that helps with community schools. So if they're saying they give back 65 to the school district, I think we need to look and see what does the school district fund. I do know if Anchorage loses and they've lost 165, they will close programs. And there's been some controversy over raising the fees $1 per person in Anchorage and you'll cover the $155,000. Some of those participants are dual participants, so they're going to get hit more than once if you raise the fees $1. And I think the director of Anchorage is in D.C. right now, or I'm sure Debbie Bogart would be online and could answer those questions.
Well then, questions of Ms. Kitka, Senator Bundy?
She's very right. A lot of people, particularly in Girdwood, are very supportive of the community school program. And if we have to ask people to raise the fees $1 and if they have to pay that 2 or 3 times because there are multiple participants, I would think that'd still be much less expensive than having the state tax the general public, run it through the state, and then try to pay for these programs. I'm afraid that the net would not be what you'd hope it'd be.
Yeah, I agree. What I really want to talk about is the need to eliminate H. Bill 165. We've already decided not to fund it. Do we really need to take the statute off of the books so that in future years, if money should become available or if the focus of the program gets worked out, gets changed, and we could maybe possibly fund 160, fund community ed again. But if you take the statute off, you take away that we'll go back 28 years and we'll be back in front of you with draft legislation to try to start it all over again.
Other questions, Senator Bundy?
Well, and Mr. Chairman, and I agree on that point. We have in other cases reduced funding and not eliminated the statute, and I would advocate that we continue in that mode.
Let's see, other questions of Joyce? Joyce, I think that you've been an unflagging advocate of this issue, and all of us appreciate you and your band visiting us for the last 3 months. And you should take away from this, You just need to look at House Bill 165, and because of your efforts, lines 5 through 12 are there. It wouldn't be there if it weren't for all the work you've done.
Thank you.
So, we thank you for your testimony.
I didn't know if it's a good thing if you recognize me or not. It means I've been up here way too much.
You're always welcome. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
You've done a great job.
Some of us have the same feeling.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joyce, for being here. Let's go to Fairbanks and speak with Julie Wild Curry. Hi, Julie. Good morning. Your testimony, please.
Good morning, Senator Wilkins, and I again appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning. I also wanted to take time to thank you and your office for being so helpful in providing information for Joyce when she asked for it. She definitely is our representative in Juneau because she lives there, and we pass a lot of information along to her on our community school programs around the state, and she is able to get those up to each of the individual legislators in their office, and she really deserves recognition for all the volunteer efforts she's put in, so I'm glad that you all recognize that this morning.
My pleasure.
I really would like to focus on House Bill 165 and definitely encourage you not to eliminate this law. I think community schools are necessary in the state of Alaska, and the law and statutes which support them need to stay in place. Many of us have read the law, as Joyce mentioned, and do not believe that it is just for startups. In fact, we continue, and even this year, May 1st, our grant was due to the Department of Education on community schools, and that grant requires that we show how we are supporting the 6 components of community education in our district. Anchorage's model, which was shared today, works for Anchorage, and they have definitely a strong community school program. But truthfully, they are only one of 53 districts that are funded through this program. The other part that I would like to mention is that over the past several years, districts have been the recipients of 21st century grant programs across the state, and those have been federal funds in the past that have brought in an additional $25 million to our state. How we helped support this was actually through our Alaska Association for Community Education in providing districts training opportunities, providing districts with grant writing opportunities to learn how to get their schools funded in these programs. Now that they have switched also to Alaska Community Learning Center grants as pass-through dollars, Alaska that has been receiving $25 million is now receiving $1.75 million. That's a drastic cut in the funds that will be coming to this state. And 21st century programs are very similar and build upon the community school program. We have been able to receive those grants and continue to do work in that area because we have a state that supports community schools and the use of their schools during out-of-school time. I encourage you to not pass this bill forward, to keep community schools law there so that as we look at other funding sources or other funding sources become available in our state, that people understand Alaska supports the schools being open pretty much 24/7 for the use of their communities. And I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Julie. Questions, Ms. Wild Curry? Julie, thanks for joining us this morning. We have one more person and her name is just coming in. Thank you. Joining us in Kenai this morning is Roger Shannon. Roger, good morning. Your testimony, please, on House Bill 165.
Well, good morning. Down there, just wanted to make a brief comment here. I know you guys are busy. With respect to all y'all that have done a pretty fair job this session, you know, there's you guys contributed greatly to Corporate Express and those that the reams of paper and all that. I know that they're quite appreciative of those efforts. But seriously, on 165, I'd like to ask you to not discontinue the community school program. I come at you from street level at this from about the last 18 years. Seeing some of the social problems that we experience from dropouts of the public school systems, the community schools have picked up some of that slack. And you guys down there are looking for ways to cut, and I would say this might be a good thing to look at. If you cut the community schools, you're going to see more social problems on the streets, in my opinion. Also, you're going to have to come up with more additional public safety funding, I believe, in order to take care of that problem. Or you could talk some of the public safety boys into just doing their job, which a lot of us know they haven't been doing too well in the last little while. Appreciate your time this morning. Just food for thought, gentlemen.
Questions of Mr. Shannon? Thank you, Roger, for being with us this morning. Anybody else on the teleconference network to testify on House Bill 165? Any other discussion at the table? Will the committee? Senator, there's a motion on the table to pass House Bill 165 from committee. Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, I object to just restate my preference that the fiscal note be zeroed out, but the enabling legislation continue.
And the fiscal note is a zero fiscal note?
It is, but passing of the bill would eliminate the enabling legislation.
Oh, yes, okay. All right. So you're objecting to passing it from committee?
Yes.
Okay. We'll hold the bill for later consideration. Next bill is 171. House Bill 171 has to do with charter school grants, sponsored by the Rules Committee by the request of the governor. House Bill 171 eliminates the charter school grant startup program of $500 per student beginning in July 1st of 2004. House Bill 171 takes effect only if the state receives federal funding for charter school startup costs that equals or exceeds the state funding available in FY03. With that, Mr. Jeans has joined us. Please present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, again, my name is Eddie Jeans, School Finance Manager for Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, I believe in your bill packet you'll have a spreadsheet that looks like this, and that will help me explain why this bill is before you. Mr. Chairman, at the top of this spreadsheet, you'll see a number of school districts that receive federal grants, I should say charter schools that receive federal grants, along with the state grant that was adopted a couple of years ago, and that shows a total funding of startup money for those charter schools. In the middle of the spreadsheet, you'll see two additional charter schools, Soldotna and Chinook, that also receive federal grants as well as state grants. Mr. Chairman, you'll notice that in this bill there's a one-year delay in the effective date. The reason for that is you have in your budget this year a request for the state grant that will fulfill the state's commitment to these charter schools of the $500 per student that is enrolled in their programs. This proposal would eliminate the state grant program because we have an application into the U.S. Department of Education that would allow us to increase the federal grants to $495,000 over a four-year period. And you can see that on the bottom part of that chart. Those four charter schools listed at the bottom were just approved by the State Board of Education at its June meeting, I believe. Mr. Chairman, we have submitted to the Director of Charter Schools at the U.S. Department of Education, Mr. Dean Kern, our proposal through our charter school liaison at the department, recommending that we allocate $150,000 a year for the first 3 years with a $45,000 grant in the fourth year for a total of $495,000. If you look at the chart that has been provided to you, you can see that the $495,000 of federal grants exceeds any of the combined federal and state grants for any of the other charter schools. Mr. Chairman, we'll have this level of funding available for at least a five-year period before we have to apply for a new federal grant. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. Jeans? Senator Hoffman?
The new federal grants, what communities are they representing? Frontier, High Tech, Horizon, Tongass?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, Ketchikan, Matsu. I'm sorry, I'll have to get back to
Horizon.
You on the other two.
Horizon
is in Matsu.
Tongass is in Ketchikan.
I think Tongass is in Ketchikan, and I'm not sure on the other two. I'll have to get back to you.
Frontier sounds like Fairbanks.
The other one sounds like Matsu. I don't think so.
I'd be happy to get that to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions of Mr. Jeans? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The students that are under the charter schools, if they did not attend, or if there's a problem with, what's the alternative to the charter schools for those students that are there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the alternative for students is to attend their public school or one of the statewide correspondence programs that are offered. Those are at least two alternatives. In some of our larger communities, we do have alternative high schools, which would be available to them.
Last question I have, Mr. Chairman, is the education comparable, and is the cost per student comparable to going to those alternatives?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it depends on the number of students that are enrolled in a charter school. Under the current foundation statute, there must be at least 150 students to be counted as a separate school. Otherwise, they are funded with the largest school within the district. In terms of the whether or not the educational program is comparable, I think the department is still in the process of evaluating that, and we will continue that with the state school designators as well as the federal school designator system.
Getting back to the first part of the question, remind me again what the answer is to as far as the cost comparison between the alternatives and charter school.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it depends on the number of students that are being served in that school. Each school generates a different dollar amount based on the size of the student population.
You don't have an average?
I don't have an average,
you,
sir.
Other questions of Mr. Jeans? We have on the teleconference with us this morning Roger Shannon, still there in Kenai. Roger, your testimony, please, on House Bill 171.
Yes, sir. Thanks again this morning for allowing the time. Here again, I'd like to make sure that the charter schools are allowed to continue for a time being. I think some of the school districts in the state need to prove to us that they can do their job and do it fairly and functionally. The NEA seems to get quite involved in the business of teaching kids. Unfortunately, they've also been able to raise the cost of a lot of these programs over the years, and the kids have been the ones that have seen the lack of benefit while the NEA members have seen the positive side of these benefits. Here again, I'm coming at you from street level. I haven't been to any political correct schooling or anything like that. I'm just talking to you at street level. And I once again, I'd like to encourage you to continue to start the charter school program for our time being until been proven to us that we're going to get into more vocational, technical, more vocational training type things for those kids that obviously are not going to go on to college. And there's quite a number of those that fall through the cracks and end up on the streets and in your drug rehabilitation programs if they're lucky enough. That's about all I have to say on this one, gentlemen.
Thank you, Roger, for joining us. Anyone else on the teleconference network in testimony on House Bill 171? Seeing none, let's come back to the hearing room. Any further discussion on House Bill 171? Will of the committee? Senator Taylor's moved House Bill 171 from committee. Is there objection? Seeing none, House Bill 171 passes from committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Bundy. Brief reads. For Reneva and Jesse, we're going to do two more education bills, then we'll do a quick bill from the Department of Law and then Chitna. So we shouldn't be very long. Let's go to House Bill 174. House Bill 174 is a Rules Committee bill, request of the governor. House Bill 174 repeals the summer school funding for Alyeska Central School beginning in the 03-04 school year. In addition, House Bill 174 provides a one-year transition period in which the functions performed by Alyeska Central School can be assumed by another educational organization, such as a charter school or a school district. To present the bill today is Mr. Jeans from the Department of Education. Eddie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Eddie Jeans, School Finance Manager, Department of Education. Mr. Chairman, you gave a very good description of what House Bill 174 will accomplish. Mr. Chairman, there are two issues that are contained in this piece of legislation. The first issue is cost savings, and the second issue is a policy. In terms of cost savings, you're correct. The elimination of the summer school program will save the state approximately $1.2 million. Other cost savings, potential cost savings, is in the space lease, which is paid by the Department of Administration, which is a little over $700,000 for the space that the Alyeska Central School occupies down in the Gold Belt building. Mr. Chairman, the policy issue, I think we need to start with the history of the program. Alyeska Central School was established in 1939. When we had municipal school districts and then state-operated schools that covered the unorganized areas of the state of Alaska. The state continued to operate schools until 1977, when the establishment of the regional education attendance areas occurred. Approximately 7 years ago, the department allowed districts to operate statewide correspondence programs, and this decision was supported by the legislature through the adoption of Senate Bill 36, where the legislature clearly stated that there would be funding available for districts that operate statewide correspondence programs. Today there are 12 such programs, including ACS. The administration that believes that with the elimination of Alyeska Central School, the majority of these students will attend another correspondence program. These are the types of programs that work for these students. The department has also been in contact with a number of these statewide programs, and they have indicated that they will either develop or modify existing programs to assist those families that are currently being served by Alyeska Central School. Mr. Chairman, there are about 650 students enrolled in Alyeska Central School for the regular program. Of that, there are approximately 45 that don't have daily access to a public school in their community. This piece of legislation will also require school districts that operate statewide correspondence programs to have an open enrollment policy. You may have heard in discussions that some of these school districts have placed artificial caps on the number of students that they will allow to enroll in their programs. With this piece of legislation, those programs will have to have an open enrollment and allow any student that wants to enroll in that program to enroll at least through the foundation count period. Mr. Chairman, another issue that has come before many committees is the accreditation issue. Alyeska is the only court statewide correspondence program that is currently approved as an accredited institution. But with that, I must say that there are four other districts that have applied for accreditation, which would be the Pace Charter School in Craig, Delta Greeley Cyber School, Yukon Koyukuk, the Raven Charter School, or Statewide Correspondence School, and Galena, the IDEA Correspondence Program. These programs have what is called a provisional candidate accreditation. And what that does is it allows them to perform as an accredited institution while they go through the process for a 3-year period of actually being accredited. They have to go through a self-evaluation, and then there will be a team that will go on site and do a team review before the programs get what is called approved accreditation. But it's important for the committee to understand that while they're in this candidate provisional status, any credits that are assigned to a child are transferable credits, and a receiving institution must accept those credits. It's very important that you understand that. Mr. Chairman, I believe that just about covers my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Taylor.
Eddie, why is there no comparison, if you will, no validation, if you will, between accreditation and competency? Why is it we have all these accredited institutions in our state, and we still graduate about 37% of our student population functionally illiterate? That's just in math, in English, and in reading and in comprehension. The numbers get higher when you start looking at math and other stuff. I mean, what in the world has accreditation got to do with anything when you look at the competency levels that are coming out of the institutions that we're supporting right now?
Through the chair, Senator Taylor, it's my understanding that the accreditation process is a process in which districts go through that they have to meet certain standards when they assign a grade to a child. And once they assign that grade to a child's work, the credit that they've earned has to be accepted by any other accredited school. I can't really respond to your question in terms of how do the two, in terms of student competency, relate to accreditation. The accreditation is a mechanism in which the receiving institute has the assurance that the student's grades are of a comparable level that would have been achieved in the receiving district. It is also used for an evaluation tool in the acceptance to universities and colleges.
Senator Taylor?
In fact, if we do look at competency, and when I look at competency, I look to a nationally normed exam, not this Lake Wobegon thing that we've got going on in Alaska. When we do look at competency, in fact, these homeschooled and correspondence school children are actually doing better on the competency question than those that are in our institutions, aren't they?
Through the chair, Senator Taylor, I believe that will all come to light as we work through the school level designation system that is being imposed from the state and federal level. I would not make that statement at this point in time. We're still in the process of evaluating, which is also going to get into participation rates, how many students are participating in those assessments, which we have a very wide disparity there. So I think all that will come to light here in the very near future.
As my life experience indication has been, especially working with the small logging camps and other small communities in my district, that those young people had a very high level of competency when they came out of those homeschooled and correspondence school programs, and and actually moved back into the public school system, they were oftentimes a grade or two above level when they got there. And that's the only thing I can base it on, but I'm very interested that the department is going to follow through with the process of evaluating that question, because I think it's a very important question for all of us as to where we should be investing our money and in what amounts and what groups and other things we should be encouraging. So thank you, Mr. James.
Senator Bundy?
On that point, I think the key difference may be the level of parental involvement. You can't lie and say you've done your homework when your mother's your teacher. But I do know that last year in the Galena School District, the children in the local school district were passing the competency test at a higher rate than their IDEA program as an average. My question for Mr. Jeans was, we have several private high schools in Alaska. Are they all accredited, and if so, by whom?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy. If they are accredited, it's through the Northwest accreditation. Northwest Association of Schools, Colleges, and Universities. That's the accreditation agency for the state of Alaska.
And are you aware of anyone being refused admission to college for graduating from a provisionally accredited school or a non-accredited school?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, I am not. And if the accreditation is an issue, universities and colleges do have alternative assessments that they use to admit students.
And other than the University of Alaska and some junior colleges, most of them have additional entrance requirements beyond the high school diploma from an accredited school.
Through the chair, that's my understanding.
Senator Bundy. Other questions, Mr. Deans? We have some folks that wanted to, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your numbers, you say there's $1.2 million in savings, and which version? I see that in the fiscal note on the second fiscal note, and then you said something about $700,000 in savings for space. Was that inclusive of the 1.2, or was it total 1.9?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the $700,000 is not included in any of the fiscal notes because I really don't know what the Department of Administration is going to do with that space. So we did not prepare a fiscal note on that.
Is that leased space?
Through the chair, that is leased space.
And where was that again?
The Gold Belt Building.
And the fiscal note that we have here on 423 says a savings of $4,300,000, and that is for Alyeska School, and the other one is for, both of them are from early education, early development. So in your testimony, you did not give, is the total savings cumulative then? Are we talking about $5.4 million with the passage of this legislation, or how do the fiscal notes relate?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, the fiscal note for $4 million that you're looking at is the BRU for the Alyeska Central School. Their funding is generated through the foundation program to support their operations. We did not reduce the foundation program by the $4 million because we believe that those students are going to enroll somewhere else in the state and that money will still be utilized. The only savings to the foundation program is the $1.2 million for the summer school component. The fiscal note for the $4 million shows the BRU, Alyeska Central School, going off the books in 2005.
So if we're talking about savings, we could eliminate the summer school program and still have the Alyeska school, Alyeska Central School working, and there, and the cost to the state would be the same if we're just looking at trying to save money.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, you're correct, but the administration's position has been that since we've allowed school districts to operate statewide correspondence programs, it's time for the state to get out of that business and out of the competition with those districts.
But why would we, you know, if people want to take correspondence, you know, just like eliminating a store, you know, if it's going to cost the same, why eliminate it down and reduce the selection if it's going to cost us the same? The broader the selection of services, the better the competition, and the better the product. So to me, that position doesn't make sense if in fact we are spending the same amount of dollars. So, you know, if you reduce everything down just to one product and have no selection and no competition, it doesn't seem to me that you're moving in the right direction.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, as I mentioned earlier, there are 11 other statewide correspondence programs. They have not developed programs that mirror the program being offered in Alyeska, because that program was in existence. Once Alyeska goes away, we have been assured by school districts that they will develop, modify whatever it takes to attract those families that were previously being served by Alyeska Central School. And they will provide them the services. They will develop the programs that fit those families' needs.
That wasn't my question. My question is, with the continued reduction of options, we're reducing competition. And if in fact this cost is the same, you know, you're saying that we're not going to be eliminating that fiscal note or the cost to the foundation formula. Why not keep as much competition in the marketplace as possible? That, I guess, is the American way.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bundy?
Senator Hoffman has started me down a line of thought that, you know, Senator Taylor often mentions there are school districts that have decreasing student population. If Alyeska were eliminated and then those students chose to go to either a correspondence school or a brick and mortar school in their home district, would this indeed then, of course, bring more money to that district and, of course, perhaps be able to decrease the decrease in some of these smaller districts?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, that's a fair assumption.
Thank you.
Senator Hoffman?
That's assuming that we have space. The problem is, you know, last year we went through a rigorous process to find dollars to build brick and mortar. You know, the rule of thumb last year was that schools were busting at the seams, and we're still in the process of building those schools. And to eliminate this program and say even half of them decided to go to brick and mortar schools, that's just going to further complicate the problem. You know, and even today, you know, I think that even though we haven't spent much time and attention on school construction, primarily because the metropolitan areas have, you know, the urban areas have addressed many of their concerns by last year's legislation, doesn't mean that doesn't exist need for additional classrooms, new classrooms, and upgrading old classrooms. And I believe that, you know, by us eliminating the the ACS, it will just compound the problem that we left behind last year in addressing brick-and-mortar school construction. So, you know, I don't think that we've addressed that end sufficiently, and now we, if we pass this legislation, we will be compounding that problem.
So let's go to the teleconference network. We have Mr. Jeffrey is in Barrow this morning. Mike, if you'd please provide your testimony on House Bill 174. Good morning.
Good morning. I certainly appreciate it. I know how incredibly busy everyone is right now and with all the different issues that you're dealing with, and I appreciate this chance for to provide some testimony. I strongly agree with many of the comments that have just been made of Senator Hoffman and Senator Bundy about the need to continue the Alyeska program. We have three children involved in the program. They're all in, as of next year, they'll all be in the high school part of it. One's just graduating, one's just entering, one still is in the high school. And very important to us that the Alyeska program has a track record that's recognized by colleges. That's very significant for families that that have this age children. The other thing I think we need to keep in mind is the No Child Left Behind issue, because the Alyeska program provides certified teachers in Alaska that can fill in gaps that the smaller schools across the state may not be able to fill with the limited staff that they can have in the bricks and mortar school. And by having an available program like Alyeska, then the certified biology teacher that they may not have out in the village can provide a course that will meet those federal requirements. And I think the comments have been made in the committee that why are we stepping back and reducing the options available to families? As far as the money savings, it is certainly true that eliminating the summer school will save that $1.2 million, and that is a savings, and that could be done without sacrificing the entire Alyeska program. So I just strongly support the continuation of the school and appreciate this chance to testify.
Questions for Mr. Jeffrey? Thank you, Mike, for joining us this morning. Let's come to the hearing room, and we have Jeannie Foy to talk with us this morning. Jeannie? Is it Jeannie or Jean?
Jeannie.
Morning, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Jeannie Foy. I'm here representing the Alyeska Central School Teachers Association. And before I begin, I would like to thank you for the many hours you spend listening to public testimony and serving the public process that way. And I also did overhear someone in the hallway mention how pleased she was about the courtesy with which she was treated by this committee. Also, before I start what I prepared, Eddie Jean said the lease cost is $700,000, and last time the figure I heard was $300,000. And nobody's ever come to the school management and said, why don't we find you a cheaper place to lodge? So it's never come up as an issue for the school to deal with. Anyway, the administration has stated that closing the school is a policy decision. It just doesn't want the state to run a correspondence program anymore. The department representatives have also testified that the department fully supports competition among school districts for the statewide distance delivery programs. Although I would mention that even the fact that Galena has quite a large homeschool support program did not prevent the other 10 or so districts from offering their own homeschool support programs also. But yet, for them to order a program, to offer a program like ours, we must be eliminated, which creates an interesting definition of competition. Anyway, that being the case, the year-long extension of the committee substitute for this bill will give the school the ability to explore the possibilities of becoming a charter school sponsored by a school district. If that happens, that would fulfill the administration's goals of not wanting to operate Alyeska Central School anymore, and would also continue to give parents another educational choice. Parents have been very vocal about why they value ACS. To have a program like this requires a certain economy of scale which requires that the school remain intact. The No Child Left Behind Act poses a challenge to the state because small schools cannot have teachers certified in every subject they teach. A centralized correspondence program makes sense because then the school has enough resources to have certified teachers for every subject. I therefore urge the committee to support the committee substitute for House Bill 174.
Thank you, Jeannie. This can't be any worse than being in front of a bunch of students.
Well, she's a correspondence teacher.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Questions of Ms. Foy? Jeannie, how many kids will continue on after July 1st? There's sort of an ongoing process here. Do you have a sense of how many there are?
You mean in terms of students who have not finished with their courses?
Yes.
Quite a few will finish up later in the summer. In fact, our parent organization met and talked about if we were to become a charter school, what were the traits, the characteristics that they wanted the school to have. And number one was a year-round school. The flexibility that gives students is very important, especially to our rural families. The nine-month school year does not meet up with their needs. With their trapping and with not having access to a road to get their mail out, or to with the summer fishing, you know, which goes throughout, as I said, just doesn't follow the nine-month schedule.
Thank you, Jeannie. Other questions? Senator Bundy?
You mentioned the rural families. It's my understanding the vast majority of your students are live in urban areas. How many do live in truly rural?
I think it's around 45 or 50. I think we have about 800 full-time students and 400 tuition students. But when I was talking about the economy of scale, in order to provide those rural students courses that are rigorous and well-written with the same standards that they would have in the classroom, this requires that you have a school of a certain size. Otherwise, you don't have enough resources to offer those courses.
Senator Stevens?
I hope you didn't take offense to my comments. Sometimes humor lightens tension, but how many students does the teachers in your program manage?
You mean what's the teacher-student ratio?
Student ratio.
Was it 1 to 80 or so?
I think it's about 1 to 80.
Yes. 1 to 80.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they do have a harder time dealing correspondence in the upfront. So.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions, Ms. Foy? Thank you, Jeannie, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And for your advocacy. It's helped a lot. Let's have Cecilia Miller. Cecilia, are you here? Morning, Cecilia. Welcome to Finance.
And again, today I have testimony I prepared and the testimony I need to give now. So, first of all, I'll start. My name is Cecilia Miller, and I'm here to represent our Education Association as well. And I'd like to start with answering Senator Stevens' question. Our ratio for elementary is about 1 to 60. Our ratio for secondary, I teach math, I teach between 150 to 200 kids, very similar to a public school system, because I teach them one course. So I'd say our ratios are very similar at the secondary level.
Senator Stevens?
Is that internet correspondence, or is that, so you'd be communicating with that many students each day or multiple times a week, or?
For me personally, that exists of both online and paper-based courses. And our program is set up that we evaluate a student's work about once, mine is about every 3 weeks because I do math, it's a little more frequently. So generally I'm evaluating someone's work about once a month. Students call me, it depends. You heard from Mr. Jeffries today, his daughter's taking an advanced math class for me. I probably hear from her at least once a week, and depending on what she's studying, giving her assistance on her curriculum.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. I'm here today to support the House Bill 174, how it passed out of the House, which we think is critical to allow that additional year for the transition. You've hopefully heard from our families. I know some of them have spent a lot of time, and maybe you're not hearing from their best right now. It's been a long process for them. But they're very important that they choose our program for a number of reasons. One is that it is accredited, that it has curriculum that addresses our standards, the Alaska standards that are in place that will be tested for them, and that it's mediated by highly qualified teachers. One of the things that I think is really important, and accreditation is a big issue that I'd prefer not to jump into, but I could, is that accreditation is very important when you're talking about a selective college. We don't know, I sat at an accreditation meeting, our understanding is that we never know if a student would be eliminated because they're non-accredited. That would be part of the admissions process. There's lots of tools they use, but it's something, it's easier to get flagged out than to get flagged into a selective college. So I'd encourage that. The other piece that, unfortunately, someone asked about, the big part of accreditation is to help schools continually improve. So I'd like to give them that plug. That's their purpose as well, besides the whole credit transfer. So, and there are private schools that are accredited. I don't know about the ones in Alaska. What I heard from our parents and what I've heard overall is they value this choice. And already you've heard about the charter school, and there are three new charter schools, and I'll help Senator Hoffman. Two of them are in Anchorage. The high tech is an Anchorage business model, and one is in Mat-Su. That's the Horizon Charter School. It's a homeschool model. And the one in Anchorage, I believe, is also a home support model. And one of the differences that you're hopefully being educated is there is a difference between home support and correspondence. We are a correspondence model. There's a teacher involved in the equation. We feel that's really critical. A little bit later, you're probably going to hear that the department is going to help school districts start their programs by making our curriculum available. And I'd like to talk to you about a few of the concerns we have about that. One is, we did this in the past for districts. Lots of districts had a teacher that could teach a correspondence course, and we discontinued this because of some legal reasons, some integrity reasons, and most importantly, some educational reasons. Our curriculum is completely copyrighted, and so there's lots of issues. Remember, copyright is a very complicated thing, and so that's something I know the department's at least looking at. Integrity is a big part. This week, I've spent a lot of time trying to help seniors graduate. I need some assurance that it's their work, and having our curriculum spread kind of makes those assessments not as valid. It's important to us that a teacher is evaluating that student's progress. I like to think of it kind of like the high school graduation qualifying exam. I sat on a state committee, and a wonderful English teacher in the state said, let's put a calculator on there. Our kids use calculators. Why, when they get to the test, can't they use a calculator? And I said, it was really hard for me as a math teacher because I wish you had a calculator required on that test because that means every kid in Alaska would have a calculator, et cetera, et cetera. But the test wasn't designed that way. So if you add a calculator, that makes that test kind of invalid. I feel sort of the same way about our curriculum. When you take the teacher out of the equation, its integrity is gone. And that leads into the biggest thing, is the educational part. Our parents really value having a teacher there, a teacher that's qualified, and a teacher that's knowledgeable about the curriculum. I have curriculum I teach from other agencies. I'm not as good at teaching that one as the one that I've designed. So that's real important. And I think if you sent out our curriculum, it'd be like giving those teachers a substitute teacher every day. After a while, that substitute teacher would get better. But in the meantime, that education wouldn't quite be the same. If we centralize the service like we've done, we can have that adequate number of teachers so we can provide this service. I hope, and I'm sure that all these districts intend to develop and modify their programs. But I think that's going to take them some time. And in the meantime, we're trying to fit No Child Left Behind and meet those requirements. So I would suggest that this year is critical to figure out how our services that we provide can be continued. I hope you've heard from our students. Their year is really getting disrupted right now. So I hope you consider their best interests. And I know that you will consider the best interests of the state. So I would strongly urge you to try and consider the bill that passed out of the House. it'll allow that transition year and everybody to have the best possible for them.
Questions of Ms. Miller? Senator Bundy?
Thank you. I had heard when Alyeska parents were down here earlier that Alyeska paid their transportation to come to a parent meeting here in Juneau. Is that accurate?
Yes, those parents that were here on our advisory committee, they come once a year to help us set policy and make changes to our program so we can better serve those parents. They weren't here. When they were testifying, they were testifying on break times and different times like that. They were pretty much meeting a lot.
I understand that. I question whether that's the best use of educational money, but
Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You're saying that we consider this House version, but your preference is to keep the status quo. Isn't that correct?
I believe this is a good compromise. It allows the department to continue operating the program. If our new commissioner that started on Friday decides that's good, our new state board looks at it. It allows the school to become a charter school if that's in the best interest of the state. It allows a district to sponsor it if that's in the best interest of the state. So it leaves kind of some options.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for being with us, Cecilia. Nice to see you again. Thanks for your advocacy. Mr. Sweeney, any closing brief comments?
Very brief, Mr. Chairman. Again, Kevin Sweeney, Special Assistant to the Commissioner in the Department of Education. I just wanted to quickly talk about really the reasons behind the governor proposing and the department proposing the elimination of ACS. Again, as I talked about earlier, we believe that the voters have made it clear that they want a more scaled down government, that they want some reductions in government. And whereas at one point ACS was the only statewide correspondence program, choices in education have grown tremendously in the last decade. There's charter schools that have come on board. You talked about Mr. Jeans earlier. With the new charter school grant we have, we're anticipating another 20 to 25 charter schools, which can be formed in any district in the state within the next 5 years. Also, districts have operated not only statewide correspondence programs, but district correspondence programs. So we believe that there's a lot of choices out there available for students, and that by eliminating this program, we're taking the services that were once only provided in the state and allowing districts now the ability to take over the education of our children. And I would like to point out, it's probably very rare that this happens, but Mr. Jeans did make a financial error. The leases are $375,000, not the $700,000 that he had said. So with that, I just want to leave this in your hands and answer any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Questions of Mr. Sweeney? Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you believe that when people of Alaska talk about scaling down government, they are talking about scaling down education?
Through the chairman, I don't think that anybody wants to see any cuts to education, any reductions in funding to education. However, there are some programs that can still be run without really any severe interruption to people, and we believe this is one that by moving this program to the districts, it's like making the argument that the state's the only one that could possibly run a successful correspondence program. We don't think that's the case. We think that the districts are very capable of running a successful correspondence program, and we believe in the school districts.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
You believe...
Go ahead. Another softball.
Do you believe that when people are talking about scaling down government, are they talking about scaling down education? Yes or no?
I believe I did answer that question, Mr.
I think you did too. Okay, other questions of the administration? All right, anybody else in teleconference? Is there objection to passing House Bill 174 from committee? Seeing no objection, House Bill 174 passes from committee. Thank you. I want to make sure we get the chitinet dipnet fishery in. Crystal, we'll have to move you to this afternoon, okay? And we'll try to get the chit and the dip net, because we have some folks from out of town to speak with us. And then we'll do the Department of Law and underage students before we adjourn here at about 1:45. Hopefully we can get those in. Let's welcome to the table representative from Representative Caldwell's office. And House Bill 210 eliminates a $25 fee for the chit and the dip net fishing permit and requires state agencies to publicize and mark the state land that provides access to the fishery. DNR is working with other agencies regarding the responsibility for signage as required in the bill. Welcome Ms. Moss to the table. Reneva, good morning. If you would present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Reneva Moss, legislative aide for Representative Coghill. The chairman did a very good job of introducing this bill, so I'll try to make it very brief and